Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Houston, standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Hello, Houston. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. We're Jeremy and Joe. Brian's around as well. Sean's still back there. Sean and Brian will be on the program tomorrow. No Joe tomorrow. Sean and Brian will be with I. And then I'm going to leave at 5 because I don't think I can put up with them for more than 2 hours.
I don't blame you.
What is that shirt that Brian's wearing? He's not listening.
It says Burger Bob.
He didn't care about us.
We were sorry. Sean and I were show planning for the hour that Jeremy's gone. It's from Bob's Burgers. It says Burger Boss, though.
It looks like a Mario Brothers game.
It is a, it's a reference to, there was an old game called, I think it might have been called Burger Boss, but it's a reference to that video game.
I'm not sure you can pay me enough money to wear that shirt.
I wasn't going to offer.
$200.
Done.
I started too high.
I guess we
say
did,
less.
I guess we did bunk down.
Bring it in here, Brian. You're doing the rest of the show bareback.
No, thanks.
Lots to get to today. Astros begin a series today in Baltimore. K-Way Tang is going to be on the mound. I don't think he's going to throw very many pitches. Maybe two innings for K-Way. Astros start a series today. They actually start while we're on the air. We might have to look at a first inning bet.
Let's go.
Yeah, our sweat of the day today, for all of those who are dying to know, which half of you. We're playing the Champions League.
We are.
UEFA Champions League. They're at the half. First leg of the two-match aggregate between Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich.
Okay.
Which, everybody knows about Bayern.
We're on the draw here.
We're on the draw here at plus 290. PSG has the halftime lead at 3-2.
Okay.
So, it's in play.
It could be worse.
It's in play. Yeah, it could be worse.
And normally
we're chasing a goal.
Yeah, I feel like a 0-0 is actually worse.
Why would that be worse?
Because someone wants to win.
Not always in the first leg.
That's lame.
In fact, the visiting team a lot of time in the first leg, if they can get it home at 0-0.
They like that?
Yeah, but then away team goals, I think, factors in. I don't know. I don't think away team goals does factor in. Because I think they go to PKs if they're all square after two legs in the Champions League.
That seems complicated.
It's not really. You just add up the score of two matches.
Well, if the away team goals factor in, that part is what seems complicated.
I don't know if they do that in the Champions League. I think that used to be an MLS rule.
Okay.
I feel like they do PKs in the Champions League, but I don't know that for sure. I'm like 60% sure.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
I don't know.
You are the voice of Houston soccer. So
no, I'm not the voice of Houston soccer.
Well, you're number one.
I was the former... Houston radio play-by-play voice of the city for my work with the Houston Dynamo.
That's
for
true.
1 year. Yeah.
It says, text line says, away team goals no matter counts. That's not English, which sucks.
What did he say?
Away team goals no matter counts.
Maybe he meant no longer counts.
That's probably what it meant.
Yeah, that's tough, though. That's hard to predict.
he corrected it with no longer.
Okay, all right. Okay, good. So you could see my thought process play out there.
Yeah, you're kind of right.
Yeah, I was like, I know that it has factored in before in aggregates. Yeah. I know it used to be an MLS rule, but I wasn't sure about the Champions League. That's better. I like that it goes to PKs. Although
PKs
I'm not a
fun.
Huge fan of PKs.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's kind of gimmicky. I like a game. I'm more of a golden goal kind of guy.
I like anything like that or like hockey with shootouts in the regular season. Mm. When you get anywhere near the postseason, none of that stuff should exist.
Yeah.
But in the regular season, it's fine.
I don't mind draws.
PKs are fun.
Yeah, they're fun. I agree that they're fun. I don't think it's a proper way to determine a winner of a game.
That's fair.
But I do agree that they're fun. I think it can be both things.
What's the worst overtime rule?
I think it's college football.
I agree.
I cannot stand the college football overtime rule. Here you go. Start at the 25. You're 5 yards away from a penetration.
I don't think that's the worst part of it. I think it's the two-point conversion.
Yeah, it's awful too.
Because there's going to be a national championship game determined by back and forth 2-point conversions.
It's awful.
At some point. And then that's when they're going to change it, is after that happens.
Yeah.
But like, could you imagine if Ohio State and the Houston Cougars were fighting for a national championship and it was 2-point conversion off?
Yeah, if Houston wins it, though, I would love the rule. Well, that's the rule would be fantastic. Yeah,
I'm sure.
Be the best rule ever.
You would.
Yeah. What are the worst overtime rules in sports? 713-780-3776. We're going to get to the Rockets here in a little bit, trying to become the first team in NBA history to come back from 3-0. Rocket Power will air this week.
It will.
It's good to know.
Because there's no game on Friday, right?
No, there's a game Friday.
They would play Friday.
They would play Friday.
I thought it was Saturday for a second. Yeah. There'll be a show on Friday no matter what, win or lose.
You sure?
Yeah, we're going to dance around the Kevin Durant topic this time.
All right.
We're going to be more prepared this time, so it will air on Friday.
Kevin Durant might roll his ankle dancing.
He might, or on his walking treadmill that he was on today.
Yeah.
He might roll it waving goodbye to DeAndre Ayton.
See you later, DeAndre Ayton. I caught a block today on Twitter.
What'd you do?
Some random dude on the internet. This is another proof that like we sensationalize baseball. Did you see this Mason Miller, San Diego Padre, ball rolling down the third baseline?
Yes, Ty
France picks it up. Yes. Everybody thinks it's foul.
I was watching.
Umpire calls it fair. Oh yeah, they were playing the Cubs.
Yeah.
That's right. I didn't put two and two together. People are losing their mind. Oh, they're Padre still won the game. Like, it's not that big a deal, guys. It's not that big a deal. But people are so upset because, like, oh, Mason Miller, first run he's given up, which he gave up two hits after that.
Yeah, it would have been first. It was bases loaded with no outs after the Matt Shaw play was the first one. And there was bases loaded. So he still might have given up a run. It was a non-save situation.
People are so mad that, like, the umpire called that fair.
But they're more mad about Mason Miller's ERA streak, right?
Well, I think they're projecting.
But the reality is we should be mad at the umpires being terrible at their jobs.
Completely disagree.
It's right in front of them.
It's the right call right in front of them.
It was? Why?
Because the ball was fair. That's why.
Wait. I guess I need to see the camera angle you're looking at.
I need to see the camera angle you're looking at.
I think it's clearly foul.
Based on what camera angle?
The one that was coming like towards
the... in center field down the third baseline. That's a really good camera angle to determine if the ball's fair or foul.
It looked like it was over the line.
Have you ever heard of the parallax effect? Because I think you're a victim right now to the parallax effect.
I don't know what that is, no.
Whenever you look at things at an angle or whatever, that they have a different perception, basically. Like, in fact, there's people on the internet that are proving it right now. They're like, hey, look, if you start from there, I don't know how to prove it to you. I'm not smart enough to figure out like how to show this as an example. But if you were to look at something over there, Joe, mm-hmm. If you're looking at the ball here,
okay,
and then all of a sudden you move to level with the ball, it's going to change your angle, right?
Sure.
So how could you tell an angle right down the line when you're looking at it at a 45-degree angle? You can't. It's the parallax effect.
Okay.
Yes. And the reason that ball's fair is because it was hovering over the line. It doesn't matter where the base of the ball is, Joe. What is true about this baseball?
It's round.
It is round.
Yes.
It is round. Does the base of the ball cover the whole diameter of the baseball?
No.
So why does the base of the ball need to be on the foul line in order for it to be fair?
It doesn't.
Correct. It doesn't. People don't realize that. And people are like, oh, the John Boys of the world, these idiot casuals, these noobs who know nothing, are like, oh, that's the worst call in the world. These umpires are terrible at their job. The umpires are right on top of it. They see that the ball is hovering over the top of the line. The base of the ball is not on the line. I grant you that. But they can see that the plane of the ball is hovering over the line. And here's another thing. This happens almost once a year. This happens all the time. It's a terrible angle, Joe.
You think that's...
That's a terrible... Whenever, if you were to rotate the camera over right down the line, that's a totally different look. That would be thrown out in the court of law. That would be thrown out in the court of law so fast because of the parallax effect. I don't even know if I'm saying the word right.
I don't know if you are either, but I think it's
foul. Can't tell there, Joe. You can't tell based on that camera angle. No, like there's other examples too of like people
the other side.
Whenever you change your angle, it's going to change your perception of the call. It's going to change where the ball's at in your eye, in your mind's eye. So that would be thrown out of court so fast.
Okay, so someone blocked you because of this topic.
Because I proved them wrong.
Okay.
And they were like, I don't like being proven wrong. I'm, my ego on the internet, some random name. I'm going to block this guy.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fair ball. It happens almost every year.
It's not the worst thing you've been blocked for.
The Mets, it happened to the Mets. You remember the Mets, whenever that little slow roller was going down the third base line, the base of the ball was in foul territory, but the plane of the ball was in fair territory, and the Mets pitcher ran over and slapped the ball with his glove, and the Pirates scored three runs. And I think it was, I can't remember who the manager of the Mets was, but he came out there like hot, bumping the umpire. He got thrown out of the game. That happened. It happened to the Yankees with Aaron Boone. We see this like once every, probably every 2 years. And we just forget. We just forget that, oh, yeah, it's not the base of the ball. It's the diameter of the baseball. Okay. But then also people are losing their minds over this and having a knockout, drag-out argument over this in a game the Padres won anyway.
Yeah, they did win the game.
It's sensationalism in baseball. Joe, do you want to know the rule?
Yes.
You can literally find the rule book of Major League Baseball on the internet.
I know that.
This isn't hard. It's not difficult. We live in the internet era where we can find things on the internet that, you know, can get us down to the, you know, brass tacks of what, you know, the conversation's about, what the debate about. A fair ball is a batted ball, Joe, that settles on fair ground between home and first base, between home and third base, or that is on or over fair territory when bounding to the outfield, blah, 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 blah. That one doesn't really pertain to that because it wasn't bounding into the outfield. Another one, it is fair while on or over fair territory touches the person of an umpire or player, or that while over fair territory. There you go. It's over fair territory. The ball, it was over the foul line.
Okay.
The foul line we know is fair.
No, I just feel like...
Which I don't know why we don't call it the fair line or the fair pole, because when it's on the line and when it hits the pole, it's fair. It's kind of ridiculous that it's called foul. And I will concede that some of the rules in baseball are stupid and they're not well written, and they could probably do a way better job of like informing, because that happens all the time, because these people like don't know how the rule's written, and they'll get it. Like, you see it a lot with the runner's lane, right?
Yeah, they have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, people argue the runner's lane when it's like is the sky blue, you know?
Yeah.
But they don't know the rule. It's like, oh, you're wrong. You just don't know the rule. That was the case yesterday.
Okay.
So many, and John Boy out here.
Blaming
the, you're out here bashing the umpires, too.
I thought you're proving me wrong.
You're over here looking at a center field camera trying to judge if a ball is fair or foul down the third baseline.
Yeah, you're right. I was.
Mm, that makes me sick.
Sorry. I apologize.
I forgive you.
Thanks.
I forgive you. So other people are blocking me on
the
internet.
That's soft.
College OT is worse, but Ghost Runner on second and MLB Extras also sucks. That's a good call. I did not think of the Manfred Man as I was thinking about
it. I'm going to be honest. I thought I was going to hate it way more than I do.
I hate the Manfred Man. Hate it.
I'd
rather a game in a tie, Joe.
Okay, so I agree with that.
Thank you.
I also would like to see a tie in baseball instead of a position player on the mound. I think that's stupid.
Well, I think you should have a throw in the towel rule.
Exactly. Well, that's what they're doing.
Right.
Just like, I know it's Vegas and betting odds and over and unders is a problem with all that stuff. Whatever. Figure it out.
I wonder how many times when a position player has come in to pitch a game that the game's not already over the total.
So there's I think it's the live bet aspect of it.
Oh.
There is what the problem is. But even then, like, I would rather the game be over then. So I do agree with you that I would rather a game end than with the Manfred Man rule and go to the hockey rules where you get a half a point. But it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Because it's better than going 18 innings on a Wednesday night and having to play the next Thursday afternoon.
Rather be a tie.
I'm fine with that, but they're not going to do that.
Rather be a tie. Junkie, Jeremy makes me sick. I'm sorry the facts make you sick, my guy. Sorry. Junkie, same thing with different camera angles impacting whether a pitch looks like a strike or not. Absolutely. The parallax effect, Joe.
I'm learning new things.
I don't even know what subject that would be. Would that be geometry? Would that be... I think it'd be geometry. I think the parallax effect would be geometry.
I don't know. What else would it be?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
Algebra?
No. If X was the third baseline and Y was the baseball, solve for fair.
That was not a real question. That was sarcasm.
Solve for fair. That's one of your best lines, Jeremy.
That was sarcasm.
Oh, That's so funny.
That was a serious question.
Oh, it's good. All right, 713-780 Jerry ESPN. Anyway, I was feeling that sort of way. I texted Brian today. I was like, hey, I don't think that's a full segment. Here we go. Just rambled on. Brian knows me better than I know me. Go.
Yeah, what time is it?
Brian knows me better than I know me. That's my bad, Brian. I'll concede the L on that one. 713-780-ESPN. Brian knew I was going to go on a tangent and talk for 13 minutes. Lots to get to today. I have a Texans offensive line draft theory that I think all of you are going to love. We'll cash them or trash them. It is a Tuesday. Alex Cora has been sacked, Joe.
Yes.
Robbie Thompson has been sacked, Joe. Alex Cora was offered Robbie Thompson's job, according to reports. Alex Cora said, no good, I'm good. I don't need Philadelphia in my life. How much worse do the Astros need to be in order for Joe Espada to get sacked? We'll talk about that a little bit later. But the Rockets are trying to do something that's never been done before, Joe. Mm-hmm. Never been done in NBA history. They're trying to become the first team ever to come back from a 3-0 deficit to win a playoff series. The most recent example that we have, at least for the big three sports, I don't know if it's happened recently in hockey. I know it's happened in hockey. I don't know if it's happened more recently than the Red Sox coming from behind 3-0 to the Yankees and winning the ALCS. I know it's happened in hockey. Don't know if it's more recent than that. But anyways, remember the Red Sox whenever they did it? You know, Kevin Millar, you know, Dan Shaughnessy, 3-0 deficit. Remember they called them the idiots?
I do.
What's the moniker for the Rockets? And I think we already know it. What's the moniker for the Rockets as they try to be the idiots like the Red Sox and come back from 3-0? Also, what's the rallying cry for the Rockets as they try to do this? Remember Rocket Power. Remember Kevin Millar to Dan Shaughnessy before game 4. He said, don't let us win tonight. This is a big game. They've got to win because if we win, we've got Pedro coming back today, and then Schilling will pitch game 6, and then you can take that fraud stuff and put it to bed. Anything can happen in a game 7. Don't let the Sox win this game. That's how I feel about game 5. But what's the rallying cry? What's the moniker for this year's Rockets as they try to do something the Red Sox did? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. You can watch along on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975.
In his underwear, living in his mother's basement.
They don't know about the parallax effect. I can promise you that.
Nope.
They have no idea.
I know what it is now.
You do. YouTube, ESPN Houston, TikTok, ESPN975. They could teach you a thing or two about the parallax effect. Also on Twitter, ESPN975. Joe's at Joe George Radio. Brian's at Sag by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's Jeremy and Joe, ESPN975 and 979HD2.
Listen to ESPN975 and HD. 979HD2.
It's Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
This is the idiots I have to do with. The chalk is foul territory. Being on the outside of the chalk is foul. I know you're a Houston fan and I enjoy some of your content, so I'm trying to be consolatory. But the ball is clearly on the outside of the chalk with separation when third base picks it up. That makes it the fall foul. He doesn't know about the parallax effect. He also doesn't know that it's about the diameter of the ball, not the base of the ball.
Ben Verlander's making it seem like Major League Baseball says you're wrong.
How? Let's hear it.
He tweeted out, official ruling from MLB. I reached out to MLB since there's a lot of confusion regarding this play. And they said, quote, in our umpire manual, here's the definition of a fair ball. Fair ball, definition of terms. When in contact with the ground, a ball must be in contact with fair territory and not merely over fair territory in order to be judged to be fair.
They need to change the way the rule's written.
Yeah.
So it's not that way in the rule book.
So what he's saying the MLB said is not what the rule book says.
I wonder, so who does he say he spoke to?
He said he reached out to MLB. That's all he said.
This play's happened before. Multiple times. And it's called this way every time.
Yeah, I'm starting to side that you're right. I had no ball. Don't know the rules.
It's interesting, though, that he reached out to MLB.
Boom, there we go. Jeremy Branham's right.
I wish they'd figured this out. Anyways, whatever. Rockets. Rockets down 3-0. Trying to do something that hasn't been done in the big three professional sports since the Boston Red Sox did it to the New York Yankees when they were down 3-0.
Yep.
So I have the moniker for this team. In fact, Kevin Durant already told us the moniker.
Okay.
The Red Sox were the idiots. What did Kevin Durant call Jabari?
The R words.
Yeah. We already had the moniker for the Rockets.
Love it.
They're ready to do it.
Yes.
They are the R words are ready to do it.
The lovable R words.
Yeah. And when I say R words, I mean Rockets. That's what I mean.
Sure.
So Kevin Durant already called Jabari what the moniker has to be. Because every team that comes back from 3-0, Joe,
yeah,
that is in the Big Three, has to have a moniker. The Red Sox had the idiots. The Rockets have the R word that Kevin Durant called Jabari.
Love it.
There you go. The moniker's already been established.
I can't wait for the 30 for 30.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, the lovable R words.
And here's the rallying cry for the Rockets. Don't let the Rockets win game five, Joe.
Don't let the Rockets win game five.
Yeah. They come back home for game six.
Yeah.
And then in game seven, Kevin Durant comes back. And then in game seven, Kevin Durant, heroic. Oh, everybody's bashing on that. He can't even be on the bench with his team. He's soft. He's fragile. Mm-hmm. All of these things.
Nope, not in game seven.
Don't let the Rockets win game five because the series comes back to Houston. And then in a game seven, Kevin Durant, the Slim Reaper, is going to make his return, his triumphant return.
I love that.
Don't let the Rockets win game five, Joe.
I think that when they win game five, the Rockets are going to win the series.
Don't let them win game five.
Yeah. Don't let them do it.
If they win game five,
it's
over.
Don't let Jabari go off. Don't let Amen go off. Don't let Alpi go off.
Don't let the Rockets win
game five. Don't let Reed, another R word, go off in the game.
Yeah. He had a good game in game four.
He did.
He had a good game. You know who knows this, too? You know who knows that the Rockets can't win game five?
The Lakers. They know
this. In fact, did you hear what Kendrick Perkins had to say on ESPN?
I did not.
Kendrick Perkins, I think, sees eye to eye with me. AJ's cousin. Didn't know that until the other day. Here was Kendrick Perkins calling game five a certain thing for the Lakers.
Game five is a must win for the Lakers. I know that much. They better get it done in game five, which I believe they will, because if it's prolonged past that, then we're going to be having a different conversation. But game five on Wednesday is a must win for Bron and the Los Angeles Lakers, because you don't want to have this series extended and all of a sudden Kevin Durant comes back and all of a sudden the Rockets and their confidence continue to grow and all of a sudden we could be seeing something that we've never witnessed in the history of the NBA. So again, me knowing Bron, he's going to come with a level of focus. Those role players are going to play better at home, but they're in a must-win situation game five. They better close it out.
There you go.
LA.
There you go, because the R words will come all the way back.
All the way back.
Series comes back home in game six. Yeah. Kevin Durant will return in game seven. Kendrick Perkins is calling it like it is. Game five is a must win for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, I will say I've been thinking a lot about what we talked about yesterday, about the idea of the Rockets coming back from down 3-0.
Uh-huh.
And what that means.
So much.
I would love it so much. I would love to see Nick Wright have to go on television. I'd watch a show for the first time ever. To see him have a mental breakdown of the first time a team ever comes back down from 3-0, and it's LeBron James' team.
Wouldn't it be hilarious?
It'd be the best.
It might force him into retirement.
It would end the GOAT debate with LeBron and Jordan. We'd never have to have
Jordan
it again.
Jordan never blew a 3-0.
Never, but if LeBron does, to the R-words.
Red Sox have the idiots, Rockets have the R-words.
Yeah.
When we say R-words, we mean Rockets.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
We mean
that
Rockets.
That word that Chris Broussard said once on TV.
I knew other people that said it on air, too. We mean Rockets. Whenever we say our word, we're shortening Rockets.
Yeah, not Reed.
Yeah, what Kevin Durant texted, all that. I don't know. I don't know what he texted. That's not my business. It's not my business. It might be everybody else's business. It's not my business. We say our words, we mean Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
The R words down 3-0, like the idiots were down 3-0. Come all the way back to win the series.
It'd be a great day.
It would be unbelievable.
It would be.
Now, Kendrick Perkins calling this a must-win for the Lakers is comical.
That's a stretch.
It's 3-1, Kendrick.
It's a big stretch.
they would still have two more other games in order to advance. I don't know how game five is a must. Like, obviously, we're having fun with this. Kendrick Perkins calling game five a must-win for a team who's up 3-1 might be one of the most comedic things I've ever seen from a sports commentator.
Like, I know they have to come out there and have hot takes to make their shows interesting, but it's not a must-win game. It's just not.
It's not at all.
Game 7's back in LA.
In fact, there's only one other game that would be less meaningful 3-0.
Yes.
Like, they still have two games at home. Like, one more after this if they were to lose this game. Calling the series a must-win for the team that's up 3-1 when they will still have one other home game remaining in the series is one of the craziest takes I've ever heard in my life.
But, you know, Austin Reaves is coming back, so.
Yeah, that bum.
Series is on now.
I'm happy
he's coming back. 5 is so big for Joe if Austin Reaves has like a 40-point game.
It's a 40-burger.
It really would be. Not that I want the Rockets to lose. So if he can put up 40 in a loss, it's good for me.
Just saying, Game 5 is a must-win, according to Kendrick Perkins. Not for the Rockets. It's not a must-win for the team that's down 3-1.
That can go home after this
game. It's not a must-win for the team that would literally have their season end with a loss. It's not a must-win for the team that would see their season die. No, it's a must-win for the team who's up 3-1, who had two other games to advance, one of which being at home. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable take.
Must-win.
But don't let the R-Words win this one.
Don't let them win it.
Because if they win this one, they come back home in Game 6.
Yep.
And then Kevin Durant puts on the cape.
And I trust the R-Words at home.
For Game 7. Yeah. Unless it's the final minute of a game, which you're 99.9% chance to win.
Yeah.
Except for those moments. You know?
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it still. Brian, how do you feel?
Well, as long as Deshaun Tate and Jabari don't play like Jabari's. Yeah, Deshaun Tate?
Deshaun?
He sounded like he said Deshaun.
Did I say Deshaun?
Yeah, I heard Deshaun.
Okay. As long as they don't, you know, go full Jabari, then they should be fine.
Full R word.
Yeah, full R word.
No R word.
I still can't get over what Jabari was doing. Just bring the ball up. There's no pressure
on
you. Which
point? He's had so many of this series.
I know.
I mean, that one, the collapse is the worst of it, but.
Just bring the ball up.
Yeah, I know. But he's Jabari.
The Lakers quit other than Marcus Smart.
Yeah, anyway. Kevin Durant was right. That was my thought.
I did have that thought. When Jabari threw that ball, I was like, man, Durant was onto something.
Kevin Durant already gave him the nicknames.
Yep. He's like, this is who we are.
Gave him the nicknames. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Cora sacked. Thompson sacked. How much worse do the Astros need to be if Joe Espada were to get sacked? 713-780-ESPN, Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, 97.9 HD2. Do you know where people go once they get sacked? They go to Two Creeks Crossing Resort and they forget all about it. They go get some rest and relaxation. They go get some comfort. They go get some happiness. That's where they find their smile back. Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Do you want to smile? Then go to Two Creeks Crossing Resort and smile. Two Creek Crossing Resort's been making people smile forever. But it's a great time. Escape the city. Enjoy the relaxing, great outdoors. Book your stay. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com. Right now, they got it all out there. They got the open green spaces. You can move around, hike, explore. 92 acres of property for you to do so. They got wildlife out there that you don't see in the city. Beautiful, mature trees. Some of the best fishing in Texas, the Two Creeks alongside their property, the big catch and release pond in the middle of the property. They got kayaking for you. They got the pickleball courts for you. Or you can just hang out by the pool with a drink, hang out at Swampers with a drink. Also, Blue Bayou Bend, grand opening May 9th, coming soon. It's going to be awesome. What an addition to Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Already was a wonderful spot. Now with Blue Bayou Bend opening up, the grand opening on May 9th, it's gotten even better. So get on out there. They got it all. They got the glamping for you, waterfront cabins, right? You know, just cabin right on the creek. The treehouse, you walk up the steps, you're inside of a house that's on a tree. Or you can pull up the RV because they have RV hookup spots for everybody. And they're always taking care of their visitors because they believe in Southern hospitality. Annual chili cook-off in May. The grand opening of Blue Bayou Bend. Live music each and every week. Food trucks, weekend activities for the kiddos. They are going to take care of you, and you're going to have a fantastic time. So go ahead and book your reservation now. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com. That's TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com.
ESPN 97.5. This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Oh, he's Joe. I'm Jeremy. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. See if there's anything interesting on the text line. If the Astros are sellers at the deadline, then neither Joe nor Dana will be her next year. Eric the Body's getting hot in her. Okay. Alex Cora has been fired. Robbie Thompson fired today. Apparently, they asked Alex Cora if he wanted the job. Alex Cora said, no, I'm good. There's better things than managing Major League Baseball. I'm going to hang out with the family.
Don't blame him.
I'm surprised, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
You want to go from a bottom-of-the-barrel team to a bottom-of-the-barrel team?
If they're going to pay me a few million bucks, yep.
See, that's what I was wondering was, like, what kind of offer. I guess it'd be, you would think it'd be long-term, right? Not just for, like, the rest of the season?
Yeah, I would need a long-term contract. Like, I'm not going to be an interim.
Yeah.
No, I would need something long-term.
I think I'd be comfortable waiting. Because if you want that job, you can just get it in the offseason.
Yeah, and he's still being paid this year.
Yeah, so, like what's the rush right now? Enjoy the time with the family. And wait until the offseason when there could be multiple jobs open that you might be interested in. I mean, the fact that we have two already open on April 28th feels extreme, right? Like I know the NFL, we fire people early all the time, but this feels extreme for baseball.
Yeah, I didn't realize that Don Mattingly's son's the general manager
of the Phillies.
Yeah.
So he fired his manager and promoted his dad.
I mean, that kind of odd.
Yes. That's weird.
Right?
That's I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's very weird. Like that's
nefarious. Nepotism. Don Mattingly's got nepotism.
I've never heard of nepotism for your dad before. I if I'm the next manager of the Phillies, the number one rule is that Don can't be on the staff. He can't be here.
Yeah, because then you'd be worried that he would.
You're just going to fire me and hire. I mean, he's probably just going to hire his dad.
You would think
at this point.
It's kind of interesting. He was already on the staff. Like, I mean, it's pretty cool that Robbie Thompson was like, yeah, we're good. Like, he can be on my staff, no problem there.
Well, and he was the bench coach for the Blue Jays last year, right? Mattingly?
Yeah.
So he left the team that went to the World Series to go work for his kid.
Maybe they told Thompson he had to do it or he was going to get fired.
I could see that. And then his kid the whole time was like, oh, if we have a bad start, I'm just, pushing him out and hiring my dad.
Yeah.
Hiring Pops. But yeah, I can't believe we have two manager openings already in baseball at this point. It seems extreme. When we look at the Astros, what was that, 2 years ago now? When they started off like 12-24 and still won the division? I mean, it's not, the Phillies aren't totally out of it yet. The Red Sox really aren't either.
You know, and the Phillies, I mean, they have good players. I don't know about their roster. But what needs to happen for Joe Espada to get sacked? Not that we're rooting for it, but just to have the conversation, because the conversation, like a lot of fans are saying it, like, oh, Espada needs to be next, blah, 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 blah. I don't really blame Espada for what's going on this year, 11-18 through 29 games. Of all the issues that I look at on this team, I think none of them are with Joe Espada. Not that I'm a huge Joe Espada guy. Really, I'm really not. But I'm not pointing the finger at him. But how bad does it need to get? What needs to happen in order for probably Crane to sack Joe Espada?
So I think probably before this all started to transpire, I thought it was probably pretty unrealistic and they would just push Espada through the rest of the season. But now that Crane has seen two other organizations go out and do this, especially if they have any level of success here, if Boston and Philly turn around at all, I'm going to say 20 games under. Which they're seven right now. So there's still quite a ways to go to get there. But I think 20 is the number to where now I could see Jim Crane being like, you know what? I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to do it now. It's early enough in the season where maybe if your division doesn't, if the Athletics or someone doesn't run away with it, you're still in the thick of things, at least in that race, that you can pull the trigger and make the move. But so I think 20 games is the mark I'd be looking at right now.
20 games.
Under 500.
Under 500. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a long way.
I mean, if they keep losing 2 out of 3, you'll get there before you know it.
See, so they're what, 11-18 right now through 29 games. So they're losing 7 games below, the 500, or they're 7 games below 500. 11-18 through 29 games. So then you get to 20, so multiply by 3. So 29 times 3, roughly 30, 60, 90, minus 3, 87 games.
Yeah, but half.
So 87, okay.
So it's probably the All-Star break, pretty close
to
it.
Well, All-Star break's a little further than the halfway point.
It's probably a little bit more of the 90 then.
All-Star break could be the good line.
That was the other, was like, if you just want to make it nice and simple, is you go to the All-Star break, none of your guys that make it want to go anyways, unless like Cam Smith makes it this year, and then that's when you make the change, is at that point. But you also might be out of it at that point.
I'm not a huge fan of firing managers in year unless you feel like you can salvage the season.
Because clearly Boston and Philadelphia do. They think that for whatever reason, whether it's just ego or just relationships, that they feel like a change here was going to turn their season around, and that's why they're doing it right now. If you wait until the All-Star break, is there still a belief in a turnaround at that point for the Astros? That's where, like, it could be too far.
Yeah.
At that point. It could be too late.
See, I'm a fan. If you're going to make a move like that, it's to kind of like, hey, try to light a fire under the team. Try to spark something. The one that comes to mind for me is when the Astros fired Jimmy Williams and hired Phil Garner. And Garner led them that year to the postseason. They hired Garner on July 15th.
Okay.
So that would be somewhere around that 90-game, you know, sample into the season, or 90 games into the season. So that would be probably right in line with what you're saying. I'm willing to give a spot a little bit more of a leash than these. I don't need it after 29 games. I don't need it after 60 games. Now, you know, 90 games, if things are not great and you feel like you actually have a chance, all right, you can go the interim route. What's interesting about Garner, though, is like he wasn't on the staff. He went on the.
They just brought him in.
He was a former manager of the Astros. He was like playing golf at Deerwood every day. Rest in peaceful, Garner recently passed away. But he went on the staff. They fired Jimmy Williams. They brought in Scrap Iron and, you know, led him to the postseason. So and he was the manager of the World Series team.
So kind of like what the Phillies were trying to do with Alex Cora, is bringing someone from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
But he had ties to the organization.
But Phil Garner wasn't fired
by another team
that year.
Yeah.
So that would be the difference between Garner and Cora.
So they should just bring Dusty Baker back. Just, you know, see it, Joe. Come on, Dusty.
That'd be awesome. I think what the Astros would do would just hire, like, upgrade Lopez.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I think it's a tough job for Lopez, though.
But in a way, it's almost like, do you want to give him a trial run, a long-term interview this season, and see how he handles everything, how the players respond to him as the main manager and everything, before you make a decision in the offseason? Because you would think, regardless of what they do, he's going to be a candidate for the job. Like, he's going to get an interview. He might not be at the top of their list, but he's going to be in contention.
Yeah, I don't know how you can give him the job, though. Like, if you're in a position where you're firing a spot after this year, they didn't make the playoffs.
Yep.
So, they didn't have a good season. So, how are you going to hire from within a staff that you just fired? Like, I know it happens in sports. I don't see Crane doing that. Especially when I don't know if Espada was the home run hire at the time. Like, I think Crane had some options. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was, like, you know, 100% convinced that it was Joe Espada. I think he was more, you know, 55%, 45%
yeah,
of
I
Joe
think
Espada.
I, from what I remember and what I had heard, was it was between Espada and Osmus.
Oof, yeah.
Were the final two.
Which screams Bagwell, which I don't love that either.
I mean, I think that's still the name to watch in the offseason, frankly.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Like, if Dana Brown and Espada are both gone, like, I think we have to watch for both the GM and the manager position. Is Brad Osmus.
Yeah, it's scary.
It should be.
He's a handsome fella, but I don't want him around the organization.
Smart guy, would definitely tell me Jim Crane wouldn't have learned the right lessons from their decline.
I wouldn't
if they decide to hire Osmus as their general manager.
I mean, just because it screams Bagwell. I think Osmus could be all right as a manager, but it just screams Bagwell, so like the stigma of it stinks.
I don't mind the managers much. I just don't want him as the general manager, which that's what I'm saying. Like, if they hire him as a general manager, it means they're leaning further away from analytics, and he's learning completely the wrong lesson.
Yeah. Gun to my head, if you had to take Osmus on the, you know, in the organization, GM or manager, I'd much rather him as the manager. Much rather have him
because
the manager.
Wasn't he the other guy? He interviewed for Click.
I think he interviewed for both.
Yeah. I think it's like he just was like part of both options there.
Yeah,
it was. He interviewed for. I think it was for GM when Click got hired, and then he interviewed for manager when Espada got hired. I don't think he interviewed for a manager when Dusty was the guy. I think it was just a GM role at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I don't want anything to do with that because that's just the Bagwell effect. Of the organization.
Yeah, I don't think that Crane would hire Omar Lopez under any circumstance, quite frankly. The only way that Omar Lopez, I think, would be the manager of the Astros beyond 2026 is if they got rid of Espada soon and Omar Lopez led this great comeback, great surge, got him into the postseason. Everybody feels great about Omar. I don't see another scenario where Omar Lopez would be the manager of the Astros next year.
Yeah, I struggle to unless, like, you're right, like, unless he gets it early and makes a run. Like, that's the only way. Because why would you promote someone internally, like you said, if you're going to be just a missed playoff team? Unless they hired a GM with also connections to the organization. Like if they went back to, who's the guy in Baltimore?
You talking about GM?
Yeah.
Mike Elias.
Like if like Elias came in, even like a David Stearns, if he gets run out in New York, which I think he's going to.
Would love that. Love that.
Like if it's someone that has some kind of connection to Omar Lopez, then I could see it happening.
Yeah.
But that's really the only other way.
Yeah, that's fair.
But like it's.
Frankly, it would have to be the new general manager's decision.
Frankly, I kind of don't want any of that. I kind of just want to start fresh.
I would like Stearns. I would like Stearns.
It doesn't concern you what's happening in New York right now?
No. No, I don't. It doesn't bother me at all.
They're just spending a ton of money and they're bad.
Yeah. I think it's just like a bad spot.
Okay.
Like they're here you go, here's all the money in the world, but we're gonna go sign bad money and then you know, you really can't put your hands on the organization. I would love Stearns. I would take Stearns in a heartbeat. I hope he does get run out of New York because I would love him.
I think he's going to.
I would love him. Junkies have some thoughts. What would it take for a spotter to get fired? Some junkies have some scenarios as well.
Junkie?
Yes, junkie. 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, 97.9 HD2.
1976, D&M Leasing opened their doors with one mission, making a vehicle easier, smarter, and more affordable than buying it the old-fashioned way. 50 years later, that mission has not changed. But the reason that people come to D&M has only grown. They're tired of negative equity, tired of wasting weekends at dealerships, and tired of paying too much for too little. And you're not going to get a rookie either. You're going to get a salesperson who, on average, has been there for 10 years. That's going to walk you through the process from start to finish. They're going to teach you everything you need to know about leasing a vehicle, how to save you money, protect you from depreciation, and design that lease around your life. So if your payments are too high, you're stuck in negative equity, or you just want that smarter way to upgrade, call D&M at 713-290-1000 or visit dmautoleasing.com today.
Houston's only FM sports station, ESPN 97.5. To Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
All right, junkies have some ideas, and they're always
junkie?
So smart. Can we get Click back? I wish. I doubt it, though. What chances the Click would come? Well, I have a 10% rule. I feel like this is less than 10%.
I feel like you have to break the rule here.
1%.
I mean, like, what is Jim Crane even offering him? A 1-year contract again?
No, if Crane would have to his tail between his legs.
Yeah.
He would have to go to Click, tail between his legs, and say, James, I screwed up. Mm-hmm. I really screwed up, James. I like you. I screwed up. I had Bagwell in my ear. I had all these guys in my ear, and I should have listened to you. Here's what I'm going to offer you. It's going to be, you know, up there for, you don't have to pay him the most of any general manager. He's not a GM, but you're going to pay him a good amount of money. You're going to give him a good length on his contract, uh-huh. And you say, I'm not going to meddle. You have full control of baseball operations. And I think he would do it. Why wouldn't he do it? Why would he be like, no, I'm not going to take more money. No, I'm not going to take a general manager job. No, I'm not going to take your apology. No, like, you're not going to meddle with me. Okay.
It depends on, I think, what he would know about his other job prospects.
He's still not a general manager.
I know, but we don't know. Has he been turning things down?
He's had interviews.
Yeah, I think if I was James Click, I'd wait.
Okay.
I think I'd just write out the job I have. And we've all had jobs where like you get dumped to the side and. Do you want to go back and work for those people? I don't know.
It depends on the message, the pitch.
Is that your way of saying, Joe, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth here, that currently the Astros GM job would be seen as a bad job?
I think for James Click it would be.
Because I'm kind of with you in that Jeremy's scoffing. He's giving me the Nick
no, it's not. No, it's not what you said. If I'm Click, I'm entertaining it. Absolutely, I'd be entertaining it.
Entertain it is different than taking it, though. But I think you could argue the like currently because of where the farm system's at, the age of the players, the downward trend that taking over the Astros job as a general manager right now might be seen as a bad job.
I don't think it would be for a couple of reasons. One, you have an owner that is willing to pay up to the luxury tax, which we give, you know, Crane is cheap. You know, we hear a lot. I don't believe it, but we hear a lot. There's not a lot of teams in baseball that do that. Like, how many? Seven?
Something like that.
Handful of teams are right there at the competitive balance tax each and every year. He's went over it the last 2 years. So even if he's like, yeah, you can spend all of it but not go over, that's only one of seven-ish teams in all of baseball that do that. Also, if I'm a general manager, I would want the ability to rebuild a team that I'm coming into. And I actually find the Astros to be very enticing if that were the approach. I think it would be, like, if I were Click or any general manager, I would be enticed to tear it down and start over. Now, where I think you could be right, Brian, is if Crane's like, Jim Crane's like, you have to win every year. You have to go out and win. You can't rebuild. You can't tinker. Or maybe you still have a meddling owner. Okay, well, that would not be very enticing. But if you came in, you got free reign, you could totally tear it down to the studs and rebuild it in your vision, I would be pretty excited about the prospects of that.
Especially because
as a GM.
You can probably do it pretty quickly. Hunter Brown, Jeremy Pena, like if you want to go severe and go Yordan Alvarez, which I don't know if anyone would, but you have Paredes you can trade, you have Josh Hader you can move.
Uh-huh.
Like you have a lot that when you're calling contenders would be very attractive.
You could go from having one of the worst farm systems in baseball, maybe the worst, to one of the best overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that, it depends on the pitch. Depends on the pitch. If Crane's like, oh, we have to win every single year, and I'm going to be in your business, I'm good. I'm all right. I'll wait. If it's, here's top five general manager money, here's a seven-year contract, here's full reign of baseball operations, and I'm going to go chill out on the beach, and you can do whatever you want with this baseball organization, all right. I don't know how you police that.
Yeah, I just don't believe the latter to be true.
That's fair, and that's
true.
You're probably right in that.
Just his track record is I don't see it happening.
No argument there. That would be the pitch I would need to hear if I'm James Clifford.
Yeah. If Jim Crane told me that, then I would totally change my tone, and I'd be interested in the job as a hypothetical general manager. But outside of that, like,
the bigger conversation here, quite frankly, is Jim Crane better figure it out. Jim Crane has went from the best owner in Houston sports history to start meddling to now it's like, man, is this guy more of a detriment than a positive? It's like, I think that's the bigger conversation here. Like, do you have an owner now who is plus EV or negative EV?
Are you saying he needs to take a lesson from Cal McNair?
I think he needs to stop being Jerry Jones. Yes, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
He needs a Hannah?
Like, why?
Just be hands off.
Why has this organization gone backwards? A lot of people would say, well, you know, if good players have left and... Yeah, that would be true. Like, good players have left. But also, you didn't hire a general manager for 3 months. You spent bad money on Jose Abreu, Rafael Montero, and Michael Brantley. So that sets you apart. If you're not going to be willing to spend to overcome bad money, that really handicaps you. That really puts your, you know, hands behind your back a bit. So it is a little bit difficult for Dana Brown to be able to rebuild the farm system overnight or to have these players who come out of the minor league system that you can plug onto your 26-man roster and are helping. I'm a little bit crazy when it comes to, like, how I would roster build. I would have traded Springer before he left in free agency. I would have traded Correa before he left in free agency. I would have traded Alex Bregman before he left in free agency and be like, well, you're nuts. You're crazy. Okay, well, did you like the Kyle Tucker trade? Because if you like the Kyle Tucker trade, you can't sit here and poo-poo all these other trade suggestions.
There's no reason to.
Framber Valdez should have been traded.
That I totally
and, like,
agree.
That's the conversation we had. Like, is this a half measure? And look, maybe Dana Brown shopped them and all the offers were just crap. That possibility exists. We don't know. We're not privy to those conversations. But I believe fundamentally that you trade players before they leave, and then you spend the money that you're saving by filling in the holes and filling in the bridges in spots where you don't have a, you know, minor league player or prospect that's ready to go.
Well, and you think, like, when you look at this roster going into next season, like, you think Altuve, Correa, Yordan Alvarez are all going to be part of it, right? Like you have Cam Smith, probably Yainer Diaz, Christian Walker, which maybe you can move them this year if you wanted to. And in your rotation, like, you have these guys that you're still betting on, Burrows, Imai. You still have some foundational pieces to where if you did blow it up a little bit, you could then spend some money to stay competitive and try to kind of keep Jim Crane happy in the best of both worlds and that's not fully tear it down. But it is a half
measure. And I hope Imai go like, well.
You hope he just leaves?
I mean, I want to see how the rest of the season plays out. We don't have to make this decision today. And plus, it's not even our decision to make. It's Imai's decision.
Yeah.
Like, I hope that he pitches so well that he leaves you in the offseason and he wants a bigger contract from somebody else and you can get the qualifying offer.
Yep, that'd be great.
That's what I hope. I think it could go the other way where he's just really, really bad and you're hoping that he goes back to Japan.
Yeah.
That's in play. Like, I think that's probably more in play than he pitches so well that he's leaving you. Right?
I think it's more likely he's just stuck here than anything. You're just kind of stuck with him, and you're hoping that he gets comfortable in year two.
I think there's a chance he would go back home if he hates it here. But again, look, I don't know. Maybe, like, there were some articles today that some of what he was saying got lost in translation. Okay. Maybe he's not as homesick as we thought.
Yeah.
Because their translator doesn't know Japanese. You know, I don't know.
He's on his third one. Maybe he's on his fourth when he gets back.
He's pitching in Corpus today, though. Pitching in Corpus. Fab says that's a formula for mediocrity. No, it's not a formula for mediocrity. The Brewers do it. Brewers are good. And you can spend money. You can spend money. Brewers don't spend money. You can spend money.
Yeah, you can look at the Rays and the Brewers model and say we can follow a similar formula and then spend on top of it and do it better than they do.
Yeah. You go sign the best starting pitcher you can find on a 2-3 year deal.
Yeah.
Type of thing. All right, 713-780-3776. What has to happen for a spotter to get fired? Not that we're rooting for that, but what do you think it's going to take for the Astros to follow what Boston did, what Philadelphia did today? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, 97.9 HD2.
ESPN 97.5.